Welcome to the University of California San Francisco Sports Medicine Podcast featuring Dr. Nirav Pandya, Dr. Brian Feely, and Dr. Drew Lansdown discussing hot topics in sports medicine and society. We hope you enjoy our podcast and look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome, everyone, to the eighth edition of our UCSF Sports Medicine Podcast, 6 to 8 weeks, Perspectives in Sports Medicine. Once again, we have myself, Dr. Nirav Pandya, Dr. Brian Feely, and Dr. Drew Lansdown. Today, we're going to be talking about patellar instability, and this is a very timely topic because in the world of sports, we've seen two major athletes recently suffered patellar injuries. We had Patrick Mahomes during the NFL season, who you could all see on all the sports shows getting his patella relocated. And then recently we had Ben Simmons of the 76ers, who was noted to, quote, have a clean MRI, and then suddenly a couple of days later was getting surgery to have a loose body removed. So once again, there's a lot of different ways we could treat patellas and dislocations, and understanding when and how you need surgery is really important. I think probably the first question we need to ask, because it is a complex joint, Drew, is how can the patella dislocate? Why does it dislocate? And what are some of the things that help keep the patella in place?
Yeah, so with the patella, there's a few different structures that help make sure that it stays in its place. It's supposed to just track right along the front of the femur. There's a groove there that's called the trochlea, and the patella just glides in there, and anytime we bend the knee, it's just tracking along that place. And the first thing is you can just developmentally not have much of a groove. So if you don't have that there, there's nowhere for the kneecap to track, and it makes it a lot easier for it to pop out. And then you can also tear one of the ligaments. It's called the MPFL, or the medial patellofemoral ligament. And that helps encourage the kneecap to track down the middle. And then when you tear that, it's just a lot easier for the kneecap to slide out. Usually whenever it dislocates, it's sliding to the outside of the knee. And so that MPFL keeps it tracking towards the center, towards the medial side. And then another part is where the patellar tendon inserts. So the kneecap connects the quadriceps muscle, and the patellar tendon at the end attaches to the tibia, the leg, and that lets us extend the leg. And then if that's attached pretty far to the outside, that will also just pull the kneecap out and add more chance that it will keep sliding out. So a few different structures that keep the kneecap tracking down the middle.
Hey, Brian, how is this different? We talked a little bit about this with shoulder instability because there are a lot of different terms. And you'll hear this a lot when, you know, particularly when NFL players get injured. What's the difference between a knee dislocation versus a patellar dislocation? Because a lot of times when people come into clinic and say, oh, my knee dislocated out. What's the difference?
So I think that's an important differentiation to make, because that's often what we will get called to the emergency room for as well. A patellar dislocation is when just your kneecap pops out, and it can be a relatively low mechanism of injury where somebody just hits you the right way playing soccer, or you can land funny while playing basketball. A knee dislocation is essentially when you tear multiple ligaments in the middle of the knee, so your entire tibia dislocates from the rest of your body. I think there are good examples of this. If somebody has a strong stomach and you look at the Sean Livingston injury video, you can see an example of, yes, he did dislocate his patella, and you can see that when he's lying on the ground, but he also dislocated the rest of his knee and tore essentially everything in his knee at the same time. So that is the rare patellar dislocation on top of knee dislocation. Other famous knee dislocations are the Willis McGahee injury, where he essentially got hit and his knee is flopping in the breeze. Whereas a patellar dislocation that I remember from when I was a kid was Danny Manning, when he played at Kansas, his kneecap popped out, and there's an old video online where you see the athletic trainer or team physician run out and essentially just straighten his leg, and his kneecap pops back in.
Drew, Danny Manning was a basketball player, you know, in the 80s when you were in kindergarten. Yeah.
The coach at the University of Tulsa for a stretch.
Exactly.
Nobody else knows that.
Yes. The Midwest, even though I'm from Chicago, there's only Chicago. There's nothing else in the Midwest except Chicago. A question for you, Brian, just to follow up on that. You know, for a lot of these kids or adults will get seen in the emergency room. They come in, they're reduced, they're putting a big knee immobilizer, and they come in 10 to 14 days later to see us. What's your initial workup for the dislocator? What questions are you asking them?
Yeah, so I usually ask them whether or not this is the first time this has happened, whether or not this has happened over and over, and how much their knee is swollen. Because I think how much their knee swells in that first 24 hours helps me figure out whether or not they're going to need an MRI. The reality is that if it's the first time this has happened, I will almost always get an MRI. And the reason I think can be seen in how Ben Simmons was managed. The initial Woj bomb that came out was that Ben Simmons had a patellar subluxation. Everything's okay. He'll probably be back pretty soon. The second Woj bomb was Ben Simmons out for the year. And the reason is that even with what can seem like a relatively small injury, you can have a loose body where you shear off a piece of cartilage, sometimes even a piece of bone and cartilage, that if we can see it early on or see it quickly, it may give us a chance to repair that cartilage and bone injury and prevent long-term degeneration. So almost always, for a first-time patellar dislocation, I will at least strongly consider or encourage an MRI. Whereas if somebody comes in and says, well, my kneecap dislocates every time I walk down the stairs, and now I'm starting to think, well, it might be time to get treatment, but no time. I'm really interested in some physical therapy right now. I'm probably going to hold off on getting an MRI until it's going to help guide what surgery I want to do.
Kind of explain that a little bit further, Drew. You know, when someone comes in and they've got that kneecap that constantly pops out, constantly goes out, or they can kind of dislocate it out in clinic. How do you approach that patient differently than the one who's never had a dislocation before and, you know, has a large swollen knee?
Yeah, and so that first time dislocation, a lot of times we can treat those people successfully without surgery. You know, if they don't have a loose body in the knee, if they haven't broken a piece of the kneecap, things like that. A lot of these injuries can get better without an operation. And I think that's what we saw with, you know, Patrick Mahomes last year. So even, you know, a high level NFL quarterback, he's out for a few weeks and then back and performed at a pretty good level the rest of the year. You know, when you have multiple dislocations though, the chance that you're going to become stable with further strengthening or you know, a temporary brace, something like that, become a lot less optimistic with that. And then usually whenever people are really sliding out a lot, kind of suggests that, you know, either their groove isn't formed right, or that ligament is really not functioning at all, or their tracking is way off, like something that, you know, really does need surgery to correct, to make sure that they are stable.
And then when you are deciding to treat these without surgery, Drew, what's your general rehab before these patients? You know, when do you get them back to sport, and do you suggest bracing and precautions they should be taking?
Yeah, so initially we'll really just focus on regaining range of motion, and then working on quadriceps strength, knee flexibility, making sure the swelling's coming down. And then I will have the athletes use a brace. Most people can return to sport with the brace on. And I think it gives just a little bit extra support and probably some extra confidence too. And in general, you know, if this is an in-season injury, usually looking somewhere around 4 to 6 weeks in general before they're able to get back. But a lot will just depend on how their quadriceps strength is coming along. Brian, what do you think? When do you see people getting back usually?
I would agree with that. I think initially, because they've usually swollen up a fair amount, they just don't feel like even bending their knee. So my main indication, assuming that the MRI has shown no loose body and this was a traumatic dislocation without any big bony morphologies that are going to predispose this person to dislocating again, I'll aim for 3 weeks to get back on practice, and then usually try to return to games around 4 weeks. And I'd say that's successful about half the time. I think a lot of the time, even though athletes feel pretty good around 3 to 4 weeks, being truly back into game shape is going to be more like 4 to 6 weeks. Patrick Mahomes, I really wish he had taken the Super Bowl off, because otherwise Jimmy Garoppolo would have had his first Super Bowl victory, but I'm willing to hold off for this year.
And then, you know, if we are going down the route of surgery with these patients, Drew, I'll start with you. What are the things that we can address surgically? We talked about the loose body and repairing the cartilage. That seems to be what Ben Simmons may be getting. What are the different things that you can address at the time of surgery with these patients?
Yeah, for most of the surgeries for these, we're looking at either repairing or reconstructing that MPFL, the ligament that helps keep the kneecap stable. And for most people, that will be the best option to, you know, keep the kneecap stable and prevent this from happening again. Other times, though, you know, people are kind of set up to where their kneecap's going to track improperly and is going to be prone to dislocating more often. And then we'll do different surgeries where we can realign where the patellar tendon inserts. We can even reshape the groove to give that a better place to track. But those are pretty selective and not quite as common as just reconstructing that ligament.
When do you decide to reconstruct versus repair? Because I think a lot of people will say, you just repair it. You know, it's a ligament. Why do you have to, you know, put a brand new ligament in there? What's your kind of criteria for deciding to repair something and using their own, kind of keeping their own tissue together versus reconstructing it?
Yeah, and a lot of the time, either that tissue has stretched quite a bit. And, you know, in dealing with somebody who's dislocated a number of times, just you may not have a really good ligament to be able to repair. And so I think, you know, I feel better with reconstructing that ligament instead. If it has just torn off, then sometimes we can just put it right back on and that can work really well. But I think the predictability of reconstructing with a, you know, new ligament is usually the best answer, I think.
Yeah, I remember a really nice anatomy paper that came out by Dr. LaPrade, who has been a variety of different places, but currently is back in Minnesota. And the dissection of that ligament showed a surgical instrument on the other side of it, and it was almost paper thin. So for me, unless they've avulsed a piece of bone off the patella or the femur, I'm almost always going to do a reconstruction because I think it's just going to add predictability. And the last thing I really want to do is do a surgery where I put the patient through 6 to 8 months of rehab and then say, well, gosh, I hope that paper thin ligament holds because it looked really, really stretched out at the time of surgery. So almost always, if I'm doing a surgery for patellar instability, they're going to get reconstructed with a new ligament.
And I think for me, a little bit different with the pediatric population, because a lot of the reconstructive techniques are moving bone around involve the growth plates. And we do know that in general, pediatric patients who do dislocate are going to continue to dislocate. So for me, sometimes I'll go down the route of repairing or kind of tightening up the tissues to buy some time, because I know eventually they're going to need a larger procedure where we have to involve the growth plates. So rather than do a surgery that kind of avoids the growth plates and doesn't really anatomically reconstruct these patients, we'll repair or tighten them up to kind of buy time until they're 16 or 17 or older, and then Drew and Brian can take care of them being skeletally mature and get the right one procedure getting done, as opposed to kind of going through the series of 4 to 5. Because I think with patellar instability, you know, even though it's hard to sometimes treat them initially, revising them can be much more difficult after a failed surgery. So I think it's important to get that one-time procedure that's done right and not burn any bridges, you know, throughout that. Brian and Drew, what are some of the things post-operatively you kind of try to concentrate on in these patients after patellar surgery so that they have a good outcome?
I think for me, a lot of it early on is range of motion, because I think with the front of the knee, the front of the knee is really tricky. It's an area that's very sensitive, especially after surgery. And whereas I think with a lot of other surgeries that we do, patients essentially don't have that much pain, even though we do pretty big surgeries and cut bone. With the front of the knee, even small surgeries can be very sensitive. So I work hard on desensitizing that area and getting range of motion back. And then as much as I think it's a relatively easy thing to say, regaining quad strength, because your quad is the dynamic stabilizer for your kneecap, I work on that second. And then in terms of return to sport, I really try to focus the month or two before return to sports on core and agility exercises. So plyometrics, jumping to fatigue, because I think it's easy to do it once in clinic, but to be able to do it for 45 minutes running up and down a soccer field and then jumping and landing is really different. So even though I can't do that in clinic, I emphasize to my patients that that's what they need to be training for, is that having muscle control at the time when you're exhausted is what's going to prevent your kneecap from popping back out.
What's your typical time frame, Brian, for that? I know ACLs, we talk about 9 months to a year. Is there patellar instability patients kind of the same time point, assuming that you're, you know, the bone is healed if you've done any bony work?
Yeah, I think it sort of depends on the athlete and exactly what the surgery is. You know, we touched on this a little bit with shoulder instability, essentially only a few different surgeries. For patellar instability, we probably have almost a dozen surgeries to choose from. So it really is on a case-by-case basis. But the shortest I'll let somebody go back if they've had any sort of reconstruction is about 6 months. And I haven't really seen somebody have the quad control and desire to go back before then. Sometimes people have good quad control and they're just not quite ready, or they mentally say they're ready and their quad is still a lot smaller than the other side. What do you do, Drew?
Yeah, I usually tell people like that 9 month range. I think quad recovery is definitely the biggest challenge. It really shuts down after surgery and takes a lot to build back up. And then that control between the quadriceps and the hip and the core to prevent people from like the knee kind of collapsing when they're jumping, I think is really important. So I'll tell people ahead of time that I would anticipate somewhere like 9 months. Usually I think that that's a pretty good estimate for when they'll be able to make it back. What about in the younger group, Nirav?
I think it's, I kind of try to do the same amount of time as well too, because I think what a lot of people, you know, there's this common misconception that when you dislocate your patella, it's usually someone actually hitting your patella out, when in fact most of the time it's kind of how you're landing in your mechanics, and your leg rotates one way and then your kneecap goes the other way. So I think for a lot of these younger patients, it's working on mechanics, and that can be something that's particularly challenging, particularly if they're going through a growth spurt or they're kind of going through, kind of changing neuromuscular control. So I agree. Sometimes it's 9 months to a year just because they simply have to learn how to land. They have to learn to get their strength. They need their core strength because, you know, kind of in the past, when Brian was training back in the 30s, there was, you know, it was just get a massive quad and that's it. When we realized that just having a large quad doing straight leg raises isn't what's going to help get your kneecap in place by itself. It's about dynamic control. It's about core strength, et cetera. So I think those are all important things that kids in general aren't working on. And then we really have to bring that home to them as well too. One question I have for you, Drew, because you're kind of the cartilage person. A lot of time people will get kneecap surgery because they have a cartilage defect. I know there was a Warriors player in the past, Festus Ezeli, who had kind of a cartilage issue around his knee, and you know, there was various talks in sports radio about, you know, what he was going to get done. Tell us a little bit about when you do surgery to help with cartilage defects that may not be coming from instability.
Yeah, so there's a few different options that we can do to restore cartilage, and sometimes, you know, the best treatment is even just kind of cleaning up the area. And in the kneecap, that can work for a large number of people. There are some good studies on like NFL players getting back to play after just more of a cleanup in that area. And then when that's not enough, though, we can restore cartilage. One way is by taking some of the patient's normal cartilage, sending that off to a lab, and then coming back later to reimplant new tissue.
Is that just a random lab, or is that a specific lab? Because
if that's true. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and they know what they're doing, but it's a technique called MACI, and with that, it's really nice because you're putting in the patient's own cartilage cells and just a larger piece of tissue to fill that area. And the other option is with an osteochondral graft, so where we can take a piece of bone and cartilage, and for the kneecap, it's usually coming from a cadaver, somebody who's donated their knee, and then able to take a piece of that and then place that into the injured area to restore the cartilage. And I think that Festus Ezeli eventually had that rebuild the cartilage of the kneecap.
Yeah, you know, one thing I wanted to point out with Ben Simmons, and I think this has been a trend with the NBA, is I really like the fact that they're not rushing him back. And the fact that, and granted, this year is weird. They're in the bubble. Philadelphia's season could go anywhere from NBA champions to out in the first round. But telling people initially, hey, this guy's going to be out for the rest of the season, it gives him time to recover without pressure. And I think that's a real difference than what we see sometimes with the NFL or even what we saw 5 years ago, where there was a push, let's get these people back quickly. And I think when you look at somebody like, you know, even Festus Ezeli maybe didn't have the same problem, But if Ben Simmons has another dislocation because he's not rehabbed well, that may change his career trajectory significantly versus saying, hey, you know what? There is next season. The season's weird. Let's take our time. Let's get you back correctly. Probably is going to pay more dividends for athletes and hopefully in follow-up youth athletes and just everyday people that end up needing this surgery.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the thing I always remember, I think when I was younger, Maurice Claret, when he was playing for Ohio State, he got his knee scoped on a Sunday, and I think he was playing like 4 days later. And then, you know, 5 days later, and everyone's like, oh, that's how you recover from a knee arthroscopy. So I think in general as well, too, as people who take care of a lot of sports conditions, we have to tell patients that even if you don't really do anything structurally, your body just needs to recover from surgery. I mean, it's not a natural process to get surgery done on your body. So this quick return to play, getting people back, may not necessarily be the best thing to get them back so rapidly that they can play within a week or two. It's really about getting that control and that recovery to take place. Once again, Drew and Brian, thank you again for another interesting talk on instability. We touched on shoulder instability and talked on patellar instability. So once again, we enjoy all of you being part of our podcast, and we look forward to hearing you for our next edition. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the University of California, San Francisco Sports Medicine Podcast featuring Dr. Mira Bundia, Dr. Brian Feely, and Dr. Drew Lansdowne. We look forward to hearing your feedback and hope you look forward to our next episode. Thank you.